I'm Juliana, I'm an addict.
Hi,
everybody. It's lovely to be here. And I'm really glad to see all of you. I know some of you and some of you I don't know, but I'm actually genuinely glad to see all of you here because where else would you be, you know? So in about 30 hours, by the grace of God, whatever, I will be 10 years clean. I mean, so, you know, how could I possibly tell you how grateful I am to the program of Narcotics Anonymous? What could I tell you tonight that would even fractionally represent, you know, the humility and the gratitude with which I sit here, you know, a new person pretty much? And so, you know, like I said, I know some of you, but if you're new, there is no way that I would have really been able to understand the possibility that comes from making a commitment to living a life without drugs. It's, you know, a life beyond my wildest dreams doesn't scratch the surface. And so, I want to tell you everything, but we just don't have enough time. So I'm going to do my very best in 36 minutes or so to tell you why I'm so grateful, where I came from, how it works for me, and, you know, why it looks pretty rosy ahead after a fairly rough patch. So anyway, why am I here? Before coming to the Fellowship of NA, I could not manage my own life. I could not live and enjoy life as other people do. I had to have something different, and I thought I found it in drugs. You know, we hear all the time, drugs was my solution in the beginning and not my problem, and that was absolutely the case for me. Drugs were my solution. I'm pretty sure if I didn't find them, I wouldn't be here. My life, and I just turned 52, my life until I got clean was dominated by one story only, and that is what in my house we call my dead mother, the story of my dead mother. When I was freaking out on Wednesday night, trying to figure out how I would begin to express my gratitude, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and my 19-year-old was in bed with me, I said to her, you know, have I ever told you the story of my dead mother? And she said, go to bed, mummy. My mother was a using addict, like it was probably, you know, like many of you had a using addict. But my mother was a using addict. And of course, I didn't know what that meant. What I did know is that sometimes she was available and sometimes she wasn't. And as time went on, it got more and more intense. And, you know, she slept through the day and she wasn't around. And, you know, it was weird and it was scary. And I was sure it was my fault. And, you know, you hear this all the time. And so, you know, was I thieving from the other children at school when I was 7 because I was an addict, or was I acting out because things were rubbish at home? I can't tell you that. I really don't know any more about, you know, how psychology works than anybody else. But I will tell you that when I was 9 years old, just 6 days before my 10th birthday, which is this is all this season for me, getting clean of my mother dying. 6 days before my 10th birthday, my mother took a handful of barbiturates, fell asleep smoking. My brother and I were asked to stay in the basement and not come out, and she burnt the house down and died. And my father had to go upstairs and pick her up and bring her downstairs. We were sent to a neighbor's house, and I watched everything I own go up in flames, including my mother. That kind of trauma, I mean, I didn't know anything about how it goes into your bones. I was a little kid. I didn't know anything about the role of addiction in there. I didn't know anything except that it probably wasn't safe for me to be in the human race anymore. And I remember that day that my dad told me that she had actually died, and I was sitting on these steps in somebody's, in the house that we were staying at, some really beloved neighbors, and it was like a hexagonal shower stall descended, and that was the end of my participation with humanity. And somebody said to me, another beloved, my Aunt Nancy, she said to me, feelings are like a pyramid, and if you don't let them out, it'll be like a volcano and it will explode. Now, I still remember that, even though I couldn't touch that. And there's a lot of that in my life where somebody would say something to me, and I held it in a place that was good, that was whole, and that was alive, but that I couldn't go to all the time. I think maybe that was, you know, like the chamber of my higher power, you know, the good room of vitality and living. But anyway, you know, my life from then on was just marked by grief. Pictures of me when I was little, I look like the saddest girl you have ever seen. And I was really sad. And my dad married somebody who just hated me, and it looked like there was just going to be no good in store for me. And then I found drugs. And it was like, you know, I could tap into something that wasn't oppressive, something that wasn't grief-filled. But I think more than that, what I tapped into was a really beautiful community of like-minded people who I would roll around on the floor with and giggle and eat Doritos, and who I would go to parties with and spin around on the merry-go-round in the park until probably we threw up. But, you know, I was lifted early on by a community of us. And it was probably the thing that made me have enough faith to keep going, was that slim bit of love that comes from being with your people. Even though I didn't know who those people were or what that would possibly mean. Then another really bad thing happened, and everybody, because drugs were such a shameful thing, and even though it was, you know, whatever, 1970s in America, and you would have thought we would have known better, it was clear that I had whatever my mom had, and they called it mental health. They called it mental illness. It's like they say, and we do recover, you know, for the first time in our entire history. A simple way has been proving ourselves. So I got stuck in 2 years in adolescent psychiatric care with people who were on medication and stuff and who couldn't have scissors. And the weirdest thing of all was that it was full of us. It was full of other kids just like me who were misdiagnosed and who were addicts. And so while we had a lot of group therapy that didn't touch the sides, we also took a lot of drugs. And so even though I was locked up in this tiny godforsaken corner of Minnesota, I still got to party and play and listen to music and kiss boys and do other things with my people. But, you know, I would tell you that I was probably surviving and not thriving. And, you know, I always thought it would get better, and I just didn't know how. And then I had a couple things happen around the same time in my early 20s. I fell into my first sort of spiritual path, which was a nature-based earth goddess worship involving ritual and trees and no shortage of drugs. And I was involved. I got my first job, and it turned out I was really good at it. You know, I was good at work. So that was really exciting. And I found the Grateful Dead. Now, if you are not from where I'm from, it would be sort of tantamount if you were in rave culture and you just tapped into another big thing that involved music and laughter and drugs. Okay, right. So there's a running theme here I think you can hear. But the thing about this time was that because of the spiritual nature of a lot of those things, you know, the spiritual nature of giving and being good at something and having something to give to the world, and the spiritual quality of music and laughter and play, and the spiritual quality of what was essentially feminism and nature worship, I had my first spiritual awakening. And it was the first time in my whole life that I felt hope. And I thought that it was possible that a girl like me was going to have a good life. And I had, I lived for a few years with a lot of joy in my heart. A lot of people that are still in my life now, fun and parties and beaches and naked whooping around campfires and tofu and LSD and, you know, all-night parties and driving across country and sleeping on floors. And it was like a merry band of love. And it was absolutely awesome. But the problem was that, like, when everybody else was, you know, coming down at 4 o'clock in the morning and getting ready to start again, I was dropping acid at 4 a.m. by myself. You know, I was going around and drinking everything that I could find. We'd have parties. It would be very spiritual. And I would do an entire nitrous tank before everybody came. And I didn't know that I was doing it differently because everybody else was doing the same thing, but not quite to the same level. But I left that place. I went and I followed a boy and I got a new job. And weirdly, I wound up working at a publishing company for a wholesaler, book wholesaler in Seattle that sold recovery books. So I sat on the phone and I talked to people all day long who ran 12-step shops across America. I had stacks of books on my desk, like cute higher power, right? Never cracked one open. Had absolutely no idea it had anything to do with me, you know? I met another boy, traveled to another country, and, you know, as I followed work and I followed money, which was my birthright as a middle-class girl, a lot of the joy went away, and I didn't know why. You know, I moved to London. I couldn't find my people, you know, because we had a lot of money, and I wasn't doing a lot of drugs. I was drinking a lot, but, like, I couldn't find, where were my people? There was no deadheads. And there were no, I mean, it didn't look the same. I don't know. It was really lonely. I was so lonely. And I had a couple of kids, and I had a husband, and I had everything a girl could want. And I was dying inside, you know, until the boy across the street looked at me one day, and he said, I can see you. You know, like, I can see beneath that yoga wheatgrass veneer. And I felt like I came home, you know? He said, come across the street, let's take a bunch of drugs, and I swear to you, I felt like I got saved. And you're laughing, you know, you're laughing. But when I walked into my first meeting, I did not get that the people in those rooms were my people. I came around Christmas time, and everybody was complaining about their parents, and I was like, who are these people, and why are they so unhappy? You know, and it never occurred to me that these are the very people who have brought me love all the way through. So, you know, I'm here and I'm doing a good job of pretending that everything's okay, and then I get saved. I get saved by a man I like to call my rock bottom. He saved me. He saved me by bringing the drugs back in my life. And you probably shouldn't go into this sort of thing alone. You know, next time, I mean, somebody later when I had therapy, the therapist said to me, it's a wonderful experience that you went to find the source of your difficulty, but next time take a guide. You know, I sort of went white water rafting by myself. But what I really loved was that this guy, who is not my husband, God forbid anybody hears this, but this is why my children are not here tonight, who wanted to come. The thing was, is that he was so beautiful to me, and I felt such love because I was like looking in the mirror. It was like looking at my mom. It was like looking at all the people I've ever had. And there's something to me about us that is so beautiful. This like psychedelic refractory crystal range we have from the most luminous to the most dark, you know? And I loved sitting across the table high on my drug of choice, telling my entire life story over and over and over again, you know, compulsively until 2 o'clock in the morning in the hopes of connecting with another person just like me. Because this, you know, all I've ever wanted to do, you know, all I've ever wanted to do is love and be loved and find the joy, you know? But I was locked in a shower cubicle of grief and despair and cut off from humanity, and I didn't know that the very thing I wanted the most. I didn't know that. I didn't know what the thing I wanted was, but I did know that nothing was getting in. My kid's love wasn't getting in. My husband's love was not getting in. I had no self-love. But I started to be able to feel what it felt like to love somebody else. But the thing is that I'm an addict. I'm a balls-to-bone addict. I'm a crawl on the floor, take the furniture apart, listen to the spiritual message of the radiator on day 3. I am an addict. I used every single day from the time I was about 13 till the time I was about 39. You know, I earned this chair, okay? But the day I had my rock bottom, my real rock bottom, I was supposed to be looking after my kids, and I was, my husband was like, you know, if you can't do this, you know, then I don't know what to tell you. And I was like, I can do this. Anyway, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and my kids were in my bed, because that's where they always are, right next to me. And I looked in the eyes of my daughter, and I saw that she was scared of me. And it was like, boom. It was the same story as with my mom. Holy shit, the one worst thing that ever happened to me, and I turned into it. Because this is the thing about addiction. This is the thing about having no choices. If you're not clean, you just repeat the same stuff over and over, unconsciously, like a pinball through life. You know, I didn't want to become my mother. I didn't know how not to become my mother. My father was the one who gave my mother the drugs that she wound up killing herself with. You know, my husband was the one giving me the drugs. I mean, it was like over and over. My mother had a wonderful career. She gave up for love. I am an intelligent woman, and I did not work for like 15 years. But I didn't look at any of this stuff because I was blind, deaf, and dumb. Walked into recovery. Somebody said to me, this beautiful girl, Anna, she said, you're going to love it there. It's very spiritual, and you're very spiritual. And I was, I read tarot cards. And she said, you know, there's a lot of writing, and you like writing, you like homework, and it's true, you know. I do like writing, and there's a lot of, you know. So I was like, sure, I'll go. Thank God nobody told me the truth. You know what I mean? I thought I was getting to go to another, like, ritual experience. I walked in the room, and who the fuck are these people? And, you know, I went right out again, but I couldn't stay clean. You know, the night of my spiritual awakening, you know, as I'm lying in bed sweating, and I recognized that my kids were scared of me and that it wasn't going to change. You know, I said, God, you know, what can I do to live, to be of service, to live the life I want? And a voice came down. It was the first time God talked to me, and a voice came down and said, you only have to do one thing, sweetheart. You have to get off drugs. And I thought, oh, anything but that. Anything. Because I couldn't imagine what life would be like. I just could not imagine it. That was the first time God talked to me. So, went in, tried to stay clean, couldn't stay clean. Went back to my third meeting. The girl who used to become my first sponsor, Christiane, wherever you are, heads up sister, said to me, you're going to have to come more often than this. And I did. I came for 18 months, almost 2 years. I did everything that was suggested. I did tons of step work. I had sponsees and sponsors. I did service. I was such a good girl because I'd been such a bad girl. And all I wanted to do was be good. And I found in my beginning of recovery a whole set of rules that if I followed them, I would be assured I would be good. Unfortunately, I wasn't actually present. And I wasn't alive, and I wasn't connecting because I was still in my little shower cubicle, but I was like a performing monkey. And I thought I had a great recovery. And, you know, there are people who knew me then who have said, you had a by-the-book recovery, but nobody was in the house. You know, how do you tell somebody how to inhabit their own life? How do you say, these are the steps that you can take? Because what I heard was, these are the steps you take to stay clean. And that's what I love about recovery. You can use this program to stop taking drugs. Or you can use this program to learn who you are. Or you can use this program to change your life completely. Or you can use this program to find out what your skills are and what you have to give to the world at large. And every one of those things is absolutely fine. And so this first time, I basically stayed clean. But I didn't get it. And I didn't get it because my higher power wasn't really with me. Even though I love nature and I love trees and I have shrines in my house and I still read tarot cards, and if you know me, you'll know that I think of myself as a deeply spiritual woman. There was no vitality there. There was no life there. And it wasn't really the God of my understanding. You know, and it says in step 2, we have to be honest about our beliefs. And I couldn't really be honest about them because I didn't know what it was that was really going to not make me stay clean, but make me recover. And I didn't know what I was recovering from or what I might recover to. So I did the best I can, and it was good enough. But I did go out. I went out because it wasn't touching me. It wasn't feeding me. And I spent 18 months drinking, which is a drug. I don't know if you've heard that piece of literature. I've heard it a lot of times. But what the hell? alcohol is a drug. Where are people in the group? So we continue, you know, okay. I went out on alcohol. Long story short, I never really drank that much when I was using it except to come down, but I was in the freezer at 4 in the morning. You get this, 4 in the morning. Who's awake at 4 in the morning? It's a lot of 4 in the mornings in my life when I'm using. 4 in the morning drinking vodka neat out of the freezer. Until the day that I decided that it would be a good idea to score so that I could pick my kids up from school. And smashed the car on the way from the dealer, woke up after a blackout, and the penny dropped. Yeah. I knew from my first set of steps that I was an addict and that I had a broken off switch. But what I didn't get until I relapsed, yeah, was that not only am I an addict and I have a broken off switch, but I'm an addict. And as a result of that, I'm going to have to learn a way to live that takes that into account. And it isn't just going to be not picking up drugs. You know, it's going to be about figuring out who I am and how to protect myself and keep myself centered and on that fountain of gratitude, my higher power, so I don't pick up. And that relapse was the best thing that ever happened to me. I got humility, and somehow it was like Leonard Cohen says, you know, that crack where the light gets in, you know, my arrogance, my closeness, the shower stall, I got a crack in there. And I came back. My blessed sponsor, Daria, wherever you are, thank you, sister, my second sponsor, said to me, darling, instead of asking what you can do for Narcotics Anonymous, why don't you ask what Narcotics Anonymous can do for you? And it never occurred to me, what can it do for me? Because the first time I was like alone, I was with everybody, but I was alone. And when I came back, it dawned on me that I could be part of something really cool at the forefront of something really beautiful if I was open to it. But what does it mean to be open to your recovery, to be open to your higher power, to be open to your step work, to be open to your sponsor, to be open to your sponsees? What condition do you have to be in to get there? You know, for me, I had to do all of the steps, one, to find out who I was and what moved me, two, to find out, you know, what God was to me, and three, to figure out if I was willing, truly, truly willing to live that life. You know, if I could crack myself open enough to take the risk. You know, terrible things happened to me, and I wasn't that happy about being open enough to be alive. But without it, it's not worth living, and of course you would use. So I've done a couple different rounds of steps, and in each of them, different things have happened. The first rounds of steps for me were all about learning to live without using. One, I'm powerless, I have a broken off switch. But I'm also, if there's anything in my life that I don't accept, if I don't accept how I feel, if I don't accept how you behave, if I don't accept what I'm doing, where I'm going, and where I'm at, then I will drive myself crazy. And when I go insane, I become obsessive, and a washing machine goes around in my head, and it tells me all sorts of shit. But one of the things it tells me is that I'm not okay. And that there's no hope, and that I get bound up. And again, I get closed and not open. I want to be open. So I have to figure out what I need to do to switch that off. And it's generally open myself up to a third way, because one and two are in a locked loop. So in three, call my sponsor, read some literature, get to a meeting. One, two, three, call it the recovery cha-cha. One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three. Four, there was a lot of stuff that wasn't my fault. You know, I didn't ask for any of that. However, I remember my rock bottom once saying to me, do you really think your mother, wherever she is right now, really wants you to have devoted the entirety of your life to thinking about her being dead and taking drugs? I was like, huh, that's an interesting thought. So, you know, what's on me? You know, man, did I cling to that story. Just like every other story I've clung to, you know. Poor me, life is hard, no one loves me, it's not okay, the universe is not benevolent, you know. In my step five, so, so powerful, my second one in particular, because I loved my second sponsor, Beyond Repair, and I told her, things I've never told anybody. Of course, now I don't have that much trouble saying what they are because they're the same, you know, noise that goes on when I couldn't sleep on Wednesday night because I was excited about doing this chair. At about 4 in the morning, I hear this voice saying, you know, you probably are too fat. It was like, okay, I know who you are. I know you. Because I sat next to this woman and I said to her, I'm scared of being old. I'm scared of being fat. I'm scared that no one will love me. I'm scared no one will listen to me. She said, yeah, welcome to the human race. Oh, it was so good. In 6 and 7, I learned that because of all the therapy I've done to get over my dead mother, which of course didn't work because I was on drugs, all what I learned was I tend to look at things with these pathology glasses on, what's wrong and what can I do to fix it, right? And I never look at things gently. And I learned this great line in my first step 6 that has carried me through. I am unskillful. I am unskillful, as it says later in step 11, because skilled people aren't born with their skills, and I've been on drugs my whole life, so where would I have learned to do anything? So most of the mistakes that I make are because I'm scared and I misstep. How loving and tender is that? You know, I just have behaved unskillfully, and so if I behave unskillfully, all I do is say sorry, try not to do it again, and wonder what it was that made me scared. 8 and 9, I didn't have a problem. Everybody was nice to me. Nobody was sad. As a matter of fact, my kids, they wanted to come tonight because they are so proud of me, you know, because I did the thing my mom couldn't do. And they know the story because my brother was in jail for drink driving with his Harvard MBA. My mother's dead. My grandfather was an addict. Every one of my cousins is in one fellowship or another. It is rife in our family. And I told my kids, because, you know, heads up. Right? If they were here, you know, they would just be all googly-eyed in the front. So everybody made 10, 11, and 12 for me are what I practice now all the time. For me, I'm going to go on a limb here, folks. Inventory is the best thing I got from NA. I used to lie awake with self-loathing and wonder, what did I do? What did I do wrong? How can I fix it? Who's going to say anything? What did I do? What did I do? Because I thought all the time I did something wrong, you know, or my mom wouldn't die. I did something wrong. I didn't know what I did wrong and what I didn't do wrong. Inventory taught me how to look softly at what is going on, and it taught me to correct my missteps, but it gave me something better than that. It gave me the opportunity to think about what life I might want to live and how I might want to get there. And so for me, it's part of, you know, the step of my heart, step 11, you know. Even when I was vomiting over a toilet bowl, ready to take more drugs, I used to think someday everything's going to be different. Everything's going to be different. I swear to God, at my worst, there was still a little voice in my head that said everything's going to be okay. I don't know how, but it is, you know. My higher power, I mean, oh my God, now I could cry. I spend a lot of time bolstering the parts of my program that connect me with the God of my understanding. You know, I really do. No joke. When I came back from my relapse and I thought, how am I going to live with this? How am I going to make this not just a lifestyle, but a practice? Not practice noun, but practice verb. I thought, you know, what parts of the program fit me and what I learned through the steps? Is I'm a deeply spiritual woman. At the heart of my program is an understanding of love and fellowship, you know, people. So I want more than anything, to know what God's will for me is and how I can get it. You know, everything that my higher power, whatever it is, that life after in recovery, everything I've been given has been not just beyond my wildest dreams, but better for me than what I could have planned myself. You know, I wanted when I grew up to be Oprah. I wanted a nationally syndicated television show, and, you know, I wanted a lot of fame and a lot of money. And I'm a teacher, okay? You can see the similarity, but there is also some differences. You know what I mean? And I was brought to that career, you know, by doors opening, you know. And It was conscious contact with God as it came through my sponsor, God as it comes through y'all, God as it comes through the Grateful Dead, God as it comes through my children, God as it comes through love and intimacy. It's God that really moves me. Whatever it is that I think that is, and it doesn't have to be that way for you, it's that very, very connection, you know, that I cut myself off from when I put that shower stall down. That is what floats my boat. That is my jam. That's at the heart of my program, and everything in my life is about that. You know, I'm a teacher of kids who learn differently. I'm out in the world at large carrying my little message. I'm an unashamed, you know, sort of spiritual cookie. And I want, you know, I have a spiritual path. All I really want is to be connected, because when I'm connected, I'm on the fountain of gratitude. I'm open, and I can carry this message to everybody who comes in contact with me. Whoever you are, wherever you have been, your life can change if you want, you know. It's not true for everybody that they have to get rid of the drugs to do it. But, you know, I have seen the worst stuff. And I don't know how I look, because I can't see myself, but I'm pretty happy. You know, I'm a pretty content, pretty joyful girl. And a couple years ago, my recovery brought me to a place where I decided to make some significant changes in my life. So within the last couple of years, I have lost my husband, lost my house, my lifestyle, my two jobs, my children have gone to university. I had like a fire sale, no pun intended, and I lost absolutely everything. Me, you know, the girl whose story is dictated by fear of loss, you know, I let stuff go. And I let it go because I've received some information from my higher power through the Living Clean book, basically, because I'm like a literature fan. I don't know what to say. I mean, I love this program with all my heart. I don't even know you, but like, I wish the best for you. That's my spiritual awakening in step 12. I don't know you, but I wish you well. You know, I don't want you to get out of my way. I don't want to rob you. I don't want you to stay away. You know, I want what's best for you. And I'm so glad that we're here together, you know, and I'm glad that for the first time in our entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the life of many addicts, because who gets to have another life? Who gets to have a second chance? You know, who gets to turn their whole life around and go from one thing to another thing? Everything that I have, everything that I know was given to me from this program. In this room tonight, there are people that I just love with all my heart that I would not have met if it weren't for these rooms. So if you are new, oh, you're in the right place. So thank you so much for letting me share.